If you have a good idea, five other people have the exact same idea. If you have a great idea, 25 other people have the exact same idea. The difference between you and them is who's going to start first.
Welcome to the Success Lab podcast, where entrepreneurs collaborate to achieve greatness. And now your host, Beth Cochran.
Eli Shamouni is the founder and CEO of Tipsy and has been through the startup trenches. He's founded multiple companies, some of which had successful exits and others that didn't quite perform so well. And now he educates other entrepreneurs on how to launch. And he has sort of a non-traditional approach focused on pure execution. In this episode, I talk to Eli about how to overcome the stifling effects of perfectionism and fear of failure. Could you just tell us a little bit about your journey and kind of what brought you to the point that you're at now?
Sure. My background is in mechanical engineering. I went to ASU and I got my bachelor's and master's from there. And I thought I was going to be an engineer for the rest of my life, sit behind a cube and design products and systems. That was my specialty. And then I got my engineering job, and 6 months into it, I could not stand being in a cube and doing design work. And so I ended up applying for this program at ASU that was called the Edson program, and supposed to support students from ASU who are taking some credits. I was still pursuing my PhD and basically help them launch their business. So I applied for that program under my first company, which was Blue Dream. It was a media production company, and I got accepted into the program, and they only select 20 companies from like over 300 applications. So during that program, it's really where I learned everything about entrepreneurship. I had a great mentor, Gordon McConnell, and he pretty much just sat me down every day after his 5 o'clock shift and trained me on everything from financing to marketing to guerrilla marketing to naming your company to acquiring users to everything. And from being at SkySong and through the Edson program, I started meeting a lot of other mentors and kind of growing into the community and learning more and more every day about just simply doing it.
Yeah, it looks like you have quite a few startups under your belt. So I counted five. And I know one kind of morphed into a different name.
Yeah. So I started with Blue Dream. It was my first official company. It was media production, branding, design. We did really well. We generated a lot of revenue, but it wasn't very scalable. And I wanted to kind of work on the next big thing, kind of like a big product, a big business, not just a small business. So then I started Alpha Stripe, which was a social networking platform for military members. So it was supposed to be connecting people who served in the military together, having a safe and secure place for them to share stories. The platform got a lot of attention, nationally, and we were able to raise some funding for it. But in terms of reaching a revenue model, it was difficult to reach that. So we ended up morphing that into a secondary company called Social Cloud, which was basically using that technology platform that we developed in order to give everyone the ability to start their own social network. So if you want to start a social networking website for musicians, for artists, for actors, for any vertical that you want, we basically had the infrastructure for that. That platform ended up being used by the Furnace program at ASU, and that was funded by the DoD in order to commercialize technology. And from that, we kind of sold off the company, paid back the investors, and I started my recent company, Tipsy, which is a social networking platform for the nightlife industry. So it allows you to connect venues and nightlife goers together. So those are kind of the highlights. In terms of startups and companies that have reached revenue and a lot of users.
Very cool. That's awesome. Yeah, I actually did some work with the Furnace program and thought it was very cool how they were integrating with the DoD, and that was awesome.
Yeah, so the platform that they use, that website that they use to list all the technologies, if you looked in the bottom, like in the fine print, it says powered by Social Cloud. So that was the technology that we developed, and they were using that to license all the technology.
Okay. Oh, that's very cool. I didn't realize that you guys were behind that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was fun because our offices were at SkySong. So it was a very nice synergy that if they needed anything on the site, they would just call us up over the cubes and ask us for a new feature or something like that.
Yeah. So you ended up back in a cube.
Yeah, it was more like co-working space. But
yeah,
it's different when you are working for a big company with a 9-to-5 where you're just drained and micromanaged. I don't like to be managed at all, and I think that's why I like entrepreneurship. It's more open-ended.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different when you're working on your own company and, you know, you're it's your baby. Then it doesn't matter if you're working 20 hours a day, like you're fine sitting on a desk and just working your ass off.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. So with Blue Dream Group, was that was it hard to scale because was it more service based?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Basically, for every new account that we got, we had to hire, you know, one or two more people. And it was a very seasonal business because being in a marketing branding field, you know, you don't have that sustainable income coming in. So 1 month you might get $60,000 worth of projects and videos and productions. And then, you know, for 2 months you have nothing. And then a month after that, you get a lot of projects again. So maintaining a salary-based staff that they can sustain that growth, and then, you know, hiring people on and off depending on the projects was just very difficult to scale.
Yeah, that is the hard part with service-based businesses. So, and I'm sure each one of your ventures has had its own kind of set of challenges, but is there like a common like big challenge that you've found amongst just launching your own venture in general?
Yeah, I agree. I think every startup has its own set of difficulties. And I think once you encounter like a set of difficulty in one company, then you're going to find it easier in your second startup. That's why you just have to keep doing more and more. Eventually, one of them, you'll have like the least amount of difficulty because you've just experienced a lot of them in the past and you know how to approach them.
Mm-hmm.
I would say a lot of the startups that I've encountered in terms of scalability and general outreach marketing would have to be, you know, user acquisition, which is probably the issue with every company. It is probably the biggest hurdle. Like, how do you go from being a no-name app business brand to being, you know, a company that people will be like, oh yeah, we were going to recommend you, or yeah, we're going to use this app, or we're going to use your website, just to kind of have that recognized brand.
Yeah, definitely. That is tough. And you've done that really well, it seems like, with Tipsy, even in just the short amount of time. I mean, you guys are, what, about a year and a half old now?
We're actually 8 months old.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we launched officially. The programming started in December of last year. But officially, we launched to the public in April 3rd, 2015. So I think the industry that we're in terms of being in the nightlife scene and being more an entertainment brand, and when you give people free drinks, people like that. So having an app that you can download and you can get a free drink at different bars or be able to skip the line, I think it definitely hit an issue in the nightlife scene. And the venues also like it because we're able to, you know, host large events and attract a lot of people to their location and, you know, help them engage more with their customers.
Yeah. So you've got an interesting kind of business model where you have to appeal to both the venue owners, operators, and then also the people who frequent those. How in the early days, how did you, I guess, kind of market Tipsy or get buy-in from the venue owners?
I agree. I mean, we have honestly that struggle every day because, you know, we can't do a marketing campaign for both sides because we definitely have the customer side, the user side that's going to download the app and use it. on the weekends on a nightly basis. And we have the professional side that we're catering to business owners and venues to tell them, hey, you know, this being on the dashboard and allowing Tipsy at your location is going to improve your business. In the early days, honestly, when we started, we just didn't know how viable the concept is. So for the first, 10 to 15 venues that we asked to join, we basically gave them a free membership for life. And we promised them, 100% customer satisfaction. If they need anything, we were there to support them. We went out of our way to make those venues trust us for a chance to prove that the concept works. And the local community, actually was very supportive. We were able to get, 10 to 15 venues within a couple of weeks to join Tipsy. And after that, once, the other venues start seeing these popular locations on the app, it was kind of more like a snowball effect, like more and more venues joined because everyone was on it at that point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool. So you just focused on starting small.
Yeah. Because we weren't sure, when we started, we were trying to be very conservative. We're like, oh, in 6 months, we'll have 20 venues and we'll maybe have 1,000 users. We were trying to be very conservative in terms of our projections and what we promised and things like that. But, doing it, I guess, is the best way to prove things. We've done large events so far that attracts, hundreds of users, and people like it. Like, we get a lot of great feedback and people stick with the app because of that.
Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side, how did you kind of get the word out to more of the consumer market?
Yeah, so we launched with a bar crawl in Tempe, and we were hoping to get 50 people to that bar crawl, and we ended up with 120 people who showed up. Launch night. And that was the first exposure to the app. The app was definitely crashing on some phones because, we designed it for iPhone and Android, but you always have those prepaid phones. So it's a different screen size that we did not think about. it was very interesting, but we made sure everyone had a great time. We gave them tickets to still redeem their drinks. We got so many emails afterwards. It was just an overwhelming success. And we're like, all right, damn, we're off to a good start. Let's do this. And from that, we've just been doing a lot of partnership events with venues. We did an event with Casa, with an event with Gringo Star, with Maya, with District, with BS West, with all these venues allow us to come and set up and be inside and promote the app. And we they've been super supportive, which I think is the key to our success.
Oh, that's very cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, they've been great.
Yeah. So what's next for you guys?
Right now we're planning on expanding into other cities in the US. Our expansion program is done through licensing. So it basically allows someone in another state who is in the nightlife scene to be able to own and operate Tipsy in their area. So instead of us going to that city and establishing connections with the nightlife owners, with knowing the best marketing techniques and things like that, we basically give the app and the dashboards and all our IP and trademarks and everything. We license it to a regional operator, and it's his own business. So it becomes a license deal, and we just retain a percent royalty of all the revenue generated from that region. So currently we're licensed in over 17 cities, and we're hoping to get, probably 10 more within the first half of 2016.
Nice. Has it been a challenge to properly vet people to be sure that they have the experience in the nightlife community there and even the marketing power?
Yeah. I mean, we have a pretty extensive application that we go through, and, we have a 30-day due diligence period where we interact with that team, and we basically focus on three main things. One is, does that person have a team? We are really big on, you might have a lot of good connections in that area, but if you don't have a team that's going to be able to, manage the venues from one side and someone else to manage the users and to do all these marketing and events and outreach, because it's a lot of work. So team is number one. Number two is, you know, experience and connections in the nightlife scene. And number three is the funding capability. Do you have enough funds in your bank account to operate Tipsy for at least 6 months? So those are kind of the three main things that we look at. And we've had a lot of applications come from different cities that they just did not pass our requirement in terms of those three criteria.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so that's a whole other marketing avenue. How do you even get the word out about that opportunity?
Yeah, we've been honestly, we're playing with it right now. I can't say we have like a specific answer. We're reaching out to business brokers. We're connecting with just different business owners in those cities. So for example, someone who might own like a big nightlife brand who owns multiple nightclubs. We're trying to establish connections with alcohol and liquor brands, and we give all our licensees like a commission fee if they recommend someone else from another city. So that we're basically trying to hit it from multiple fronts, just because the whole thing started was we were not planning on doing licensing. We're planning on personally going to all these cities and launching in them. And then all of a sudden when we started, people were asking, when are you coming to Montreal? When are you coming to San Diego? When are you coming to all these different cities? And we're like, we just don't have the capacity or the funding right now to do that. But we're just going to, how about we just give it to you and you operate it in that city and you just give us a piece of the revenue that you generate. And people love that. And so we just basically went with it and we customized our entire model based on what people wanted. And that's how we plan on keep expanding, just kind of seeing where people are at and connecting with them from like a sales and marketing perspective.
Yeah. No, that's really smart too, because it's so tough to know the right levers to pull in specific communities when you don't live there. You don't know like what are the best marketing avenues and the right types of people to connect with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have a licensee currently in Detroit, Michigan, and we were just doing their training. And then they said, well, if we're launching in January, there's no way we can launch with a bar crawl because it's freezing. And so having people jump from one bar to another is just not going to work there. So this is kind of like, it just shows you the simplest example of our ignorance about those areas and, not knowing what's popular there, what's the best club, who's the best bartender, how do you talk to the managers? It just proves that going the licensing route is much better.
Yeah. Definitely something we take for granted living in Arizona. You can do a bar crawl, during the winter. Summer's off limits, but.
Exactly. Yeah. And the biggest thing is, with expansion to so many cities, like you're going to be doubling and tripling your staffing. And, with that comes like requirements for $5 million in funding, $10 million in funding, just to keep the lights on. So that was also like kind of more like an obvious choice for us to go the licensing route, which we don't have to be like spending majority of our time raising funding instead of just actually selling those licenses.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That's smart. So, earlier, you talked a lot about mentorship. I was curious, has there been one thing, or if you could pinpoint one of or a couple of the best things you've done like for your entrepreneurial career? Has it been mentorship or?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, honestly, like everything that I learned and everything that I use on a daily basis has been like through meeting a good mentor who like supports you and like tells you how it is and is not going to sugarcoat things for you is willing and to basically believe in you 100% and be able to support you that way. Any person from as I said, Gordon McConnell to Charlie Lewis to a lot of the mentors that I met at Skysong, even the Score mentors, Chuck Warshaver, Dave Miller, Lance, all these people has definitely made an impact in my life in terms of everything that I know. And that's why I honestly like to teach currently at ASU and like to mentor other startups, because, I started with being an engineer who had no idea how to even like register an LLC. And it's such a simple process in Arizona. And now, you know, I just like to see other people kind of go through the exact same process.
That actually leads me to my next question. You obviously do, you've put together a lot of curriculum and things like that for entrepreneurs. Is there a particular roadmap that you recommend?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of a lot of the entrepreneurship theory. I believe, you know, the theory in terms of business model canvas or, you know, the lean startup methods or, you know, all these different things, those are good for like, you know, 1 or 2 weeks, allows you to kind of think about your business. But I'm a big believer of just do it, you know, get out there, talk to customers, collect feedback, start developing a very early MVP, collect more feedback, you know, improve it more and more, and just simply just do it and launch it. And it's either going to be the best thing and you can tell directly from the consumers if they want it, or it's going to be a horrible idea and people just don't want it, so you can kill it fast and move on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I try to do in my classes. Like they build an entire business and they have to reach revenue by the end of the semester. Otherwise, they don't pass my class. So whether it's an app, whether it's a product, whether whatever it is, they go through the entire process of, you know, picking an idea to early market research, to developing their MVP, to talking to customers, improving their MVP, developing their brand, website, videos, like all these things. They do that in one class, and it's challenging, but they love it. Like it's real world application, not like out of a book or out of slides or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so key. So what if they don't reach revenue, but they clearly put a lot of work into it?
Yeah, so it depends. If they put a lot of work and like you can see that, you know, like the customer feedback was true. So the biggest thing with me is a lot of students just fall in love with their ideas early on, and no matter what the customer says, they still think it's a good idea. So if I actually see that, their grade gets hit pretty significantly. But if I see them like improve their ideas based on customer feedback, they just haven't hit it significantly. Like by the end. You know, that still counts toward positive grades and positive improvement. But so far, like a lot of the product-based companies and a lot of like service-based companies have done pretty well. They're able to hit their goal of $200 a semester in revenue. And the ones that have a slight more difficulty in reaching revenue are more the tech-based app companies, just because usually they're dependent on a big user base.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a cool approach. It's kind of teaching them, I guess, the proper way to really launch a business by listening to their users or potential users. Yeah. So you have clearly learned how to really hustle. Like your approach to entrepreneurship is just do it. But it seems like a lot of entrepreneurs kind of stand in their own way a lot, or maybe spend too much time just trying to obtain perfection and never actually get around to launching, or just kind of stall out. Do you have any tips for getting around that, or kind of, I don't know, just getting out of your own way?
Yeah. I mean, trust me, I work with a class of engineers and business students. And usually the engineers are very perfectionist, that, you know, there's one more feature that has to be developed, or this doesn't work like 100% like it should be. And usually what I tell them is, all right, well, if you launch it today, what's the worst that could happen? And I feel like if every entrepreneur just asks that, you know, like just ask yourself, no matter what state your product is at, like if I launch it today, what's the worst that could happen? The worst that could happen is actually nothing. Like, you know, you might get a couple of customers that say, well, this is not ready, or things like that. But you actually got some feedback and you're able to get your product out there instead of still waiting and having one more feature and one more feature. You know, I'm a big believer, if you can't launch your product within 90 to 120 days, then, you know, you're not dedicated enough for it. Or, you know, the company is just way beyond you at this point that you just can't do something with it. And I always tell, like, you know, my student entrepreneurs, like, especially in my classes, you might have big aspirations. You know, you're going to build special tents for Mars colonization. That's great. But, you know, let's start with something that you can actually reach and achieve and have some results from and have some experience with. And then maybe your next business could be that. So if you reach out to a group of investors, you can say, hey, I've done this before. I know how to launch a business. I know how to exit. Go ahead and give me $5 million because I have this wacky idea about putting, you know, about Mars colonization.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. That's kind of goes back to what you said about, you know, so many people will hold on to their idea, even though it's maybe not the best one or not what users are looking for right now.
Yeah. And I always tell them, you know, an idea is 1%, 99% is execution. So everyone has ideas. And, you know, I do encounter that with students. Oh, but I don't want to tell you my idea. Like, what if someone steals it? You know, I always tell them, if you have a good idea, 5 other people have the exact same idea. If you have a great idea, 25 other people have the exact same idea. The difference between you and them is who's going to start first and who's going to deliver on that idea. And I think that's where like a lot of people stop, is like, how do you go from an idea to actually creating a business around it? And that's what, you know, what I try to teach them in the class, how to basically establish that.
I love that. That is so cool. That's awesome. I was curious with Tipsy. So it seems like a lot of your projects have been more tech kind of app based or software based. Do you know how, being a mechanical engineer, did you have experience in building that type of stuff, or did you have to seek someone out to help you build it?
I have no idea how to write a single line of code.
Oh, okay.
But like, it kind of goes back to the point I made, like, it's all about a team. You know, like, you need to find people who believe in your vision, who have great skills. And I got lucky enough that I have a, you know, the most kick-ass team ever. Like, I always say, like, my contribution to Tipsy is probably like 5%. The rest of it, and the reason we succeeded so much, is because every single person on the team has done like so much more, and they're all like smarter than me in one way or another. And that's really what you need to surround yourself with. Like, find people that you can talk to, you can negotiate, you can yell at each other, but by the end of the day, you're hugging each other and you know that you're building something great together.
How did you find your first few people?
So my programming team actually is the same programming team that was part of Alpha Stripe and Social Cloud. So after we closed that down, just reached back to them like, hey, I have another crazy idea. And they're like, we work great together. Let's do it. My operating team, funny enough, they were actually students in my class about a year ago. And after the class, I keep pretty, you know, close connections. I tell them if you have any questions or anything like that, I'm always open to helping you. And we just became really good friends and we hit it off and we basically joined forces and launched Tipsy.
Oh, okay. So last question. What is one of your favorite tools, maybe like for workflow or time management or anything like that?
In terms of task management, I use Asana. I used to use Trello because it was like easy and simple, but when you get a bigger team, Asana is pretty good. Mm-hmm. And I honestly, I'm it's funny, I have Asana, but I'm still old school. Like, I have one of these small legal notepads on my desk and I just still put it there. I get excited when I get to cross one task off with a pen. So I don't know. I still carry that around and that's how I put all my tasks. Like, I tried a lot of the to-do lists, like apps and things like that. But I don't know. I don't use them as much than the notepad with like pen and paper.
Yeah, I'm the same way. It feels better to cross something off than to check.
Yeah, it's more exciting. Like, unless the app makes like a big deal out of it, like with like fireworks and music, that I accomplish this task, I get more excited by crossing it off on a piece of paper.
Yeah, me too. I don't know what it is. And even Asana has that unicorn built in.
Yeah, I love that. I have that on.
That is like, pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's just like a small celebration that you finished the task.
Yeah. That's cool. So any last piece of advice that you would offer entrepreneurs?
My advice is surround yourself with good people and good mentors, and do a lot of research on your idea before you spend, you know, money and time. And try not to spend too much money unless you start seeing user acquisition increase. If you start seeing users like increase on your platform, on your service, then you can spend more money, but don't like be dumping six figures into the company before you even start.
Very cool. I like that. Thank you so much to Eli. I really enjoyed talking to him. His energy is just absolutely infectious. And I really liked what he had to say at the end there about surrounding yourself with quality people. It really is so true. The type of people you hang out with will impact your day-to-day mood and your overall approach to life and entrepreneurship. If you surround yourself with high-energy people, chances are that'll start to rub off on you. If you surround yourself with people who are continually challenging the status quo, you may start to do the same. So just seek out some of those qualities that you want to build up within yourself and find the people that will help support that in you. Finally, to wrap things up, I will leave you with this quote. Nothing holds you back more than your own insecurities. That is a very powerful quote and one that I thought would be fitting to the conversation that I had with Eli. For this week's Biz Hack and past episodes, head over to successlab.fm. Next week, I'm in the lab with Tom Blondie. He is the Chief Revenue Officer at Social World and well-known startup veteran and mentor here in Phoenix. He shares some of his best tips for entrepreneurs and startup founders, so be sure to tune into that one. Until then, have a prosperous week. Magnolias make me feel invincible. Spring sweets, summer's pink. Magnolias, sweet, sweet, hey, sweet, 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 sweet. Hey. Magnolias, sweet, 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 magnolias, magnolias, sweet, 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 sweet.